Good morning, all. The first case for argument this morning, Ammons versus Elbert. Mr. Duda.
Good morning, Your Honors. Thomas Duda on behalf of the plaintiff, Clyde Ammons. This is an Americans with Disabilities Act case in which the district court granted summary judgment to the defendant and denied it to the plaintiffs after having stricken an entire expert opinion based on it not being reliable and having stricken numerous paragraphs in the plaintiff's Rule 56.1 response. Our position is, firstly, that the court erred in striking all of the expert testimony. The court erred in striking our responses to the 56.1 response, and even without that information, there are genuine issues of fact. This is the case involving Mr. Ammons, who had worked for an industrial laundry for 37 years and suffered an injury to his right leg, which caused a severe impairment that's disputed to be a disability. The defendant...
Did he get workers' comp?
I'm sorry?
Did he get workers' comp for that injury?
He did receive workers' compensation for that injury. That's correct.
Is that the determination of disability that is one determination of a level of disability?
The case was never taken to litigation. It was settled for a 35% loss to the person as a whole, which in my opinion bears no relationship to the issues in the case.
I'm only asking because I wonder if the expert worked on that one as well as this one, or was that a different thing where she gave the other opinion?
The expert is Susan Entenberg, and Susan Entenberg has worked with Mr. Ammons from beginning to end. She was a witness in that case, but by no means was she retained for that case. Her role, beginning in September of 1998, was to assist Mr. Ammons in either returning to work at Aramark or finding alternative employment through an assisted placement. And I think that's really, I'm glad you asked the question, because she gave a written report in October of 1998. She gave an evidence deposition in November of 1998. And her opinion at that time was that given Mr. Ammons' age, his education, which was, he had a ninth grade education, he had a hard time reading, that if he was not assisted and accommodated in Aramark, in her opinion, he was unemployable. And I think that that's important for two reasons. Number one, that opinion does not contradict the opinions that she gave later in the case. And secondly, it explains why Mr. Ammons is able to obtain Social Security disability benefits and at the same time pursue his case here. Her testimony was, if Aramark won't take him back, no one will take him back. And therefore, if he can't win this case, he is entitled to Social Security. Ms. Entenberg attempted to work with Aramark beginning in October of 1998. She expressed the opinion that with accommodation, she felt that he could return to work for Aramark.
Well, there's some question about her familiarity with the equipment that Mr. Ammons would be working on?
Well, there is a question. I think the question is that she was familiar with the equipment and what he did. The important thing, however, to the court is that she had attempted to become very familiar with the plant and equipment as early as November of 1998. The first letter written to Aramark, an attorney by the name of Steve McClary, was written in November of 1998 requesting an on-site inspection and an interactive conference. And on the other side of the fence, I've participated in those, and those look like management and the rehab counselor and the person going through the plant and actually trying to work together to see what, if anything, can be done.
That occurred?
No, It was ignored. No response to the 1998 letter was made. I was instructed, and that's in the record, I was instructed by the attorney for Aramark, who was Steve McClary at the time, I was to have no contact with company officials. Everything was to be done through him. We wrote him once, then I wrote a letter a second time in January of 11, 1999. Copies of that letter were sent. I wrote to him, because that's what he told me to do. But I sent copies to a number of corporate officials. And a gentleman in California by the name of Skip Erter received that letter, conferred with other corporate officials, and made an intentional decision to exclude myself and the vocational rehabilitation person from the process.
Well, see, there was, she never really saw anybody maintaining the equipment or repairing the equipment when she toured the plant, right? And so once the lawsuit was filed, did you get the assistance of the court so she could go out there and actually see these things that she was testifying he was capable of maintaining or fixing?
Okay, well, her inspection of the plant was 2.5 years later, and it was pursuant to court order. That's correct.
Right. And what I'm saying is, during that inspection, did she see anybody repair equipment or see the equipment run? Because as I understand, okay, his job was to repair equipment all over the plant floor, and my understanding why the district court excluded it was because she never observed anybody doing that.
Well, she was given access, pursuant to Rule 26, she was given access to the plant. She
right.
toured the plant.
Right.
There was no repairing going on at the time of the tour. The date, time, and place was at the mutual convenience of the parties.
So what I'm saying is, if you wanted to testify about repairs, though, and there were no repairs that day, couldn't she have gone back when they were repairing equipment or just asked somebody, you know, what happens when a piece of equipment like this breaks down? Do you have to lay down? Do you have to slide under it? Do you, you know, that's where the district court had problems, and quite frankly, that's where I have some problems, too.
The answer is, could she have? She could have. Did she have to? No, she didn't have to, because in doing her tour, she was looking at the equipment from the perspective of information she had been given by Mr. Ammons during her interview with him at the last time he was at the plant. She had talked to a gentleman by the name of Pasquale Malfeo for over an hour. She did not read his deposition. She talked to him face to face for over an hour involving what duties Mr. Ammons would perform. So when she does a plant tour, and she's talked to Mr. Malfeo as to what the repairs involve with the equipment, you can put two and two together. And the one thing I would suggest to the court, I'm really uncertain that I have a Rule 26 right to insist that the company demonstrate certain repairs. And repairs are an ad hoc transaction, so that my discussion with the company is, well, we want to see a repair on an ironer. If the ironers aren't being repaired that day, how does one anticipate when repairs are going to be done?
Well, I understand that, but I would think you could say, you know, does equipment break down from time to time? And, you know, have you ever had any experience where this piece of equipment broke, and, you know, how was it repaired? Or, you know, just get some sense of what he had to do, because I understand that for the this various work he was doing, he had to lay on his back sometime. I mean, he had to heal and do all these various things.
That's why we're here, and the court determined that was necessary, and it's the plaintiff's position that is the issue of fact. Does a person in repairing an ironer have to lay on their back in order to conduct any one of the repairs? And the answer that Ms. Entenberg gave, that Mr. Malfeo gave, and Mr. Malfeo is the head of the department. Okay, he's the head of the department. And he testified, his conclusion was that the guy could do 98.5% of the duties. But his deposition was a day and a half, and he was asked meticulously about different pieces of equipment and how Mr. Ammons could do it. But to answer the court's question, she talked to this gentleman, Mr. Malfeo, and her determination was that those pieces of equipment could be repaired by Mr. Ammons, but he would have to alter his body position from the way he was accustomed to doing it, so that when he was lifting a motor that weighed 100 pounds, in the past he lifted it. He now would have to use a hoist or an auger. Right? It's different, but it's doable. He injured one, not both knees, so if he's going to engage in repairing something that's below waist level, he has to either sit on a short stool or extend the injured leg and kneel on the uninjured leg. He has an uninjured leg. And I think most importantly, that any shortcomings in her observations, and that's really what we're dealing with here, that's why I cited to the court Walker versus Suline, any shortcomings in Ms. Entenberg's observations were the result of a conscious decision made by the defendant, who could have had her come out at the time that Mr. Ammons was still an employee, look at the plant, have the interactive conference, which this court has held numerous times is legally required, and her observations would have been better. Now, not only her observations under that scenario would have been better, doesn't mean that the observations that she had as a Rule 26 witness weren't good enough. They were good enough to create an issue of fact. The issue of fact in this case is, can you maintain the equipment at this plant without kneeling on both knees? Can you lift equipment with an auger that weighs over 100 pounds? And can you climb, instead of using a ladder, can you use the step device in the plant or the catwalk?
You mentioned Malfio. Did he say at any point that he did not think Ammons would be able to do his job because of this physical restriction?
At some point earlier, before he gave his deposition, he had made a statement to the Illinois Department of Human Rights to that effect. Most importantly, however, he was never interviewed by anyone in management who made the decision. It was testified to by Mr. Ehr and cited to the court that there was these extensive pre-interactive conference interviews with Jeff Schwingler, who was the general manager, and Mr. Malfio. Mr. Malfio, three separate times in his deposition, denied having a conversation with Mr. Ehr, denied participating in any fashion in the decision to terminate Mr. Ammons.
Mr. Zutter, may I ask you this question? As I understand, you advanced the argument that Ms. Entenberg, if she had had the opportunity to articulate a basis for her 2002 opinion, if there was a hearing held by the district court, she would have been able to.
I think she could have explained to the district court.
Yeah. That's the argument you made to us, right?
It is.
Yeah. Now, was that argument presented to the district court?
We didn't specifically in our pleading say we want a factual hearing, but it's my position that before the court can do what it did, it would have to have a factual hearing.
So it would have to be a sua sponte thing?
Yes.
You would have to request of the court? I
didn't think we had to make a specific request. But that, I will admit to Your Honor, the specific request is not contained in the pleading.
So you don't think we're faced with a waiver of that argument, the one you advanced here today?
Well, that's certainly an argument made by the defendant. No. I don't think I'm faced with it, but the defendant certainly put it.
No, I understand. I just... wanted to see what face you wanted to put on the opposition to that position.
I'm actually more concerned about the fact that she had reliable observations and her opinion could have been better if the company had fulfilled its legal obligation to engage in
that. I understand that point, and kind of following on Judge Williams' question, could you just give me quickly the request, the scenario of all the requests made and denial of opportunity and what court relief was sought and what was granted vis-a-vis Ms. Entenberg's access to this facility?
And after the litigation was filed?
Yes.
There was no...
You didn't seek the relief of Judge Darren? To
I did not.
Why was that not the case? Because that's clear. To her building a body of knowledge to assist in the case, why not seek?
Because the door, the interactive conference in 1999's purpose was to get Mr. Ammons back to work. But when this case came to litigation, Mr. Ammons wasn't going to be going back to work for this company. So the only issue is her opinion. I don't think
you wanted to buttress that opinion, I suspect,
right,
with as much information as she could gather, and I just. I'm a little lost, and I suspect Judge Williams is, to understand why you want to enlist the aid of the court to
I probably didn't think the court was going to strike her testimony.
Well, but there's something called just prevention or anticipation, there were problems they had with your expert. I mean, even when they filed the motion striking her, you could have said to the court, look, we had these problems with them before. She's been out there once. We understand they want more information. Give us permission to go out and get more. That would have, I can't imagine Dara wouldn't have granted that request, but that's the thing that troubles me, why you didn't pursue it. But you've answered it. You said you didn't think it was necessary.
That's correct, Your Honor. And in hindsight, and with the questions presented by the court, I may revisit that in my ruminations about this case in the future.
All right. Well,
I do want to reserve time for rebuttal, if I may,
sure.
Your Honor.
Of course, Mr. Duda. Mr. Kelly.
Good May it please the Court, I'm Kevin Kelly, and I represent the defendant, Aramark Uniform Services. The undisputed facts in this case come predominantly from Mr. Ammons' own admission, and those admissions demonstrate that Mr. Ammons is not a qualified individual with a disability under the ADA. When you compare the essential functions of Mr. Ammons' boiler engineer job to his admitted physical limitations, not only his personal admissions about what he can and cannot do, but also his physician's permanent restrictions that were placed on him, it's clear that he could not perform the essential functions of his job. Mr. Ammons' job involved maintenance and repair of everything in the plant, including 50 specific named pieces of equipment. He worked in a very old industrial laundry, and in maintaining and repairing that equipment, it required significant physical capacities. Mr. Ammons, after his knee injury, lacked the physical capacity necessary to perform the kneeling, standing, climbing, walking, and lifting necessary to do the job. And I'd like to give you a couple of examples that demonstrate the comparison and between his admissions about his job and what his doctor said he could do. For instance, with respect to kneeling, Mr. Ammons at his deposition testified that sometimes to fix equipment he'd have to kneel for an hour, 2.5 hours, or sometimes all day. But his doctor restricted him from kneeling for no more than 5 minutes. And in 1998, when Mr. Ammons interviewed with Susan Entenberg, he told her that he couldn't kneel at all. With respect to walking, the plant that Mr. Ammons worked in was 250,000 square feet, and it was about a block long, and there was equipment spread throughout this plant that he was required to maintain and repair on two separate floors. Now, with respect to walking, Mr. Ammons told Susan Entenberg that he could only walk less than one block slowly. And in his deposition, he testified that he can't even go to the grocery store anymore with his wife because of the walking involved.
Was there a distinction in the two periods of time with the expert? They seem to say that, well, he improved later and that the situation changed. Is that, are you going on the original discussion with Sentenberg, or is this later?
Correct, Judge. In 1998, Mr. Ammons was given permanent physical restrictions by his doctor, Dr. Krieger. He had reached what's called maximum medical improvement. Those restrictions, and it's undisputed in this case, those restrictions were never lifted. Mr. Ammons has never obtained, even to this day, a contradictory opinion about his physical capacities from any physician.
Was that, they used to go by initials, MMI or whatever it is.
Correct.
Was that based on the workers' comp analysis?
Correct. He when he injured his knee, he went through a number of various medical procedures and had various tests done to determine what he could and could not do. He went through what's called a functional capacity evaluation to determine the physical limits of his ability. After that evaluation, Dr. Krieger determined that he had the walking, climbing, standing, lifting, and kneeling restrictions. And those restrictions were never lifted. They were permanent, they remained in place, and in fact, those were the very restrictions that even in 2002, Ms. Entenberg, in preparing her expert report, those are the restrictions that she looked at to compare Mr. Ammons' physical abilities to his job and whether or not he can do them. And in fact, Aramark and their management received a report from Ms. Entenberg in 1998. In that report, she characterized those exact same limitations from Dr. Krieger as sedentary in nature. She also characterized Mr. Ammons' job as heavy in exertional level. And she concluded in her 1998 report, which was sent to Aramark management, that Ammons was, quote, precluded from his past work. She concluded that he could not perform the functions of his boiler engineer job, which were told to her in 1998 by Mr. Ammons.
Now, are they trying to say that this changed later on, that there was a time after that that... is her name Entenberg?
And Susan Entenberg?
Yeah. Did she alter her opinion later?
She altered her opinion 180 degrees later. In the context
of... How much later?
It was 2002 when she was retained as an expert witness in the case.
So it was about 3 or 4 years then.
Two or three, roughly.
Yeah.
But
well, did he? I guess the question I have is, if it matters, did he... is there some indication that he did improve as opposed to having this maximum medical, whatever it is?
There's absolutely no record evidence whatsoever that he did improve. And in fact, Entenberg based her 2002 expert opinion in this case on those 1998 restrictions that were imposed on Mr. Ammons by Dr. Krieger, nothing else. And she changed her view 180 degrees to now conclude that he can do the entire job without any accommodation whatsoever. Whereas in 1998, Aramark's management, when they were considering whether or not Mr. Ammons could be accommodated, received a report from Ms. Entenberg where she concluded that he was limited to a sedentary job, that his job was heavy in exertional level, and he was precluded from his past work.
Now let's talk about Aramark and why they didn't let Entenberg inspect the site in 1999. What was the problem there? That was a reasonable request.
Your Honor, I don't think it was, and here's why. In 1999, Aramark met with Mr. Ammons on three separate occasions. Mr. Ammons, having worked at that particular plant for 15 years and having worked for Aramark in a maintenance capacity for 37 years, knew better than anyone what his job involved. He didn't need anyone else to be able to come in there and assist him in communicating with Aramark as to what accommodations he might need. And that's borne out by the fact that in those meetings, Mr. Ammons made three specific suggestions as to accommodations. Unfortunately, those were things that would have involved the creation of a new job position for him and were not reasonable accommodations. In addition to that, Aramark's management was operating with Susan Entenberg's October 6, 1998 report, in which she concluded that Ammons is, quote, precluded from his past work and is limited to a sedentary job. Based on that report, and based on what Aramark had heard from Mr. Ammons directly and from his doctor about his restrictions, they did not conclude, or they thought that this was not a close call, that any plant tour by Susan Entenberg would be unnecessary and unproductive. And in fact, the requests that were made by Mr. Duda for Ms. Entenberg to come to the plant simply were in a letter that said Ms. Entenberg would like to conduct an on-site job analysis. If Mr. Duda or Mr. Entenberg thought that there was something additional that they needed to add that Mr. Ammons couldn't articulate himself for whatever reason, they could have certainly put that in writing to Aramark. There was no reason that they necessarily had to be present in a meeting, in a face-to-face meeting between management and an employee.
So the bottom line is they just didn't let her in because they didn't think it was necessary.
Correct, based on what she had told them in writing about Mr. Ammons and his ability to do the job. The weaknesses in Ms. Entenberg's expert report relate primarily to the fact that when she did conduct her plant tour in 2002, she failed to see or even attempt to look at many of the items that Ammons admitted, and it's undisputed in this case, he was responsible for maintaining and repairing. In preparing her expert report in this case, she didn't even talk to Mr. Ammons himself. She based her opinion solely on her own ipsy-dixit statement that he can do the job, and it lacked sufficient factual foundation to be admitted into evidence in federal court, and Judge Darragh correctly excluded it under Daubert and Kumho's hire. Mr. Duda has argued in this case that Aramark somehow failed in the reasonable accommodation interactive process. And as I mentioned earlier, Aramark had three separate face-to-face meetings with Mr. Ammons in which he had ample opportunity to suggest possibilities.
Well, did Aramark know in April of 1999 that Ammons might be able to return to his regular work activity following an evaluation?
Aramark never received anything that changed Dr. Krieger's permanent medical limitation on Mr. Ammons.
So did they know that he might be able to return to work?
Your Honor, I'm not sure if they knew of Dr. Krieger's letter that you're referring to where he says that there's a possibility depending on a functional capacity evaluation. I'm not sure whether or not Aramark received a copy of that letter. But nonetheless, it's undisputed that those restrictions that Dr. Krieger had imposed on Mr. Ammons were in fact never lifted, regardless of any speculation by the doctor in 1999 that that might be a possibility in the future. Even to this day, those restrictions from 1998 remain in place. In the interactive meetings with Mr. Ammons, Mr. Ammons suggested three possible accommodations, the first of which was to tend the boiler. But tending the boiler was not was only part of Mr. Ammons' boiler engineer job. It's undisputed that Aramark had always required its boiler engineers to maintain and repair equipment in addition to tending the boiler. In order to, Mr. Ammons essentially wanted Aramark to cull out from his job certain essential functions that he could do within his physical limitations. And that, under the ADA, as this court has said on many occasions, is not required. An employer is not required to create a new job for a disabled employee. The other suggestions that Mr. Ammons made were to repair sewing machines, which was just one of the many pieces of equipment at the plant. And the final one was to act as a maintenance troubleshooter who did not actually repair equipment, who would just be a consultant or a technical resource. But there were times, and it's undisputed in this case, when a boiler engineer would be by himself at the plant and a piece of equipment would break that could shut the entire laundry operation down. And that boiler engineer would have to immediately go and fix that equipment and would necessarily have to have the physical attributes to do that. And for these reasons, Aramark correctly found that the three suggestions by Mr. Ammons were not a reasonable accommodation. And I think it's telling that Mr. Ammons, with his wealth of experience about the plant, suggested only those three possibilities.
Well, why didn't Aramark invite his lawyer to come to those meetings? He wanted to come. He had requested it.
Aramark understood that the interactive process under the ADA was between employer and employee. Aramark was dealing with an employee who, although there's record evidence that he had limited education and reading ability, there's no evidence whatsoever that he was limited in any way in his ability to articulate himself orally. And in fact, that's borne out by his suggestions at the interactive meeting as to the precise things he thought that he could do. Mr. Duda, at the time, was engaged in an adversarial process against Aramark in a workers' compensation case. In order to bring Mr. Duda into the interactive process, would have resulted in Aramark having to retain counsel, bring counsel in, and rather than the process being between employer and employee and having a dialogue about the job, the process would have devolved into legal wrangling. And that is not something that Aramark thought would be productive. And again, as I mentioned before, if Mr. Duda thought that there was any deficiency in Mr. Ammons' ability to articulate himself, or any additional items that he should have articulated to Aramark's possible accommodations, he could have put that in writing. There's nothing that says that the interactive process has to be a face-to-face meeting in order for it to be valid. Mr. Ammons could have brought any other concerns directly to the attention of Aramark in writing or telephone call or in any other way, and he did not do so. My point regarding the three suggestions offered by Mr. Ammons is this. Mr. Ammons knew what his job involved. He knew what his physical limits were. He suggested those three things because he knew he couldn't do anything else. For these reasons, the district court's decision to grant summary judgment to Aramark should be affirmed. Are there any questions?
Apparently not. Thank you, Mr. Kelly.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Mr. Duda.
Thank you, Your Honors. I wonder if Mr. Kelly's tone of voice would be quite as calm if I would have shown up at the door of Aramark with Susan Entenberg unannounced with and asked for Mr. Malfio and said, Mr. Malfio, I'd like to sit down with you, and I'd like to have an interactive conference and talk about what my client can or cannot do.
Aramark would hit the ceiling. I've been to court when you're interviewing employees of a corporation after they've left the employment, and yet they calmly assert to the court that after three letters, not one, not two, but three letters from me indicating that my client cannot articulate his legal position, he needs a lawyer, and those letters are totally ignored, and the company comes before the court and says that's no big deal. It is the equivalent of me showing up in front of Mr. Malfio and saying, I'd like to talk to you. I suspect the police would have been called had that happened. To answer the court's question, Ms. Entenberg's opinion changed on the issue of the nature of the job. She had perceived it to be a heavy job, and when she toured the plant, she realized it was only a medium job. But there was a material change in Mr. Ammon's physical condition, and we quoted in our reply brief the April 1999 letter of Dr. Krieger. That was never pursued because, again, the three letters that I wrote were totally consciously. Mr. Ert testified I did it on purpose. Ignored. Thank you.
I just had one question. Did you have any authority to support your position that they should have admitted you to the interactive process?
There's no employment cases on point. The only thing I point the court to is ABA Rule 4.2, where an attorney cannot induce someone else to talk to a client. Now, whether Steve McCrory's representation, whether he induced the direct contact,
I
don't know.
You've answered my question. You don't have any authority.
Just one last.
I don't have a direct case. I don't. And I did look.
Your letters were directed to whom, those three letters?
Well, the first one was directed to Steve McCrory because that's the person Aramark held out. The second letter was directed to Steve McCrory with copies to a number of corporate officials, including Mr. Mr. Dayton, and the union. And then the April 11th letter, which responded to the Mr. Wrote directly to my client saying that he couldn't accommodate him by letter dated March 9th, received at the middle of March, and I wrote to Mr. Certified saying, what nerve you have to contact my client directly. I don't think what you got from my client is satisfactory, and I want to have a conference, and I want to have my expert there. That's why she's there. Thank you.
Thanks. Our thanks to all counsel. The case is taken.